Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show. I'm your host, as always, Ben Thomas. You know, if you've got your finger on the pulse of any major industry in B2B, you probably have heard a lot about data centers. How do data centers impact power utilities, IT departments, AI, all these different places? And I want to sort of suss that out a little bit more today and dig in deeper with somebody who knows far more about that world than I do. And that's Anthony Seiler, Global Director of Data Center Strategy over at Johnson Controls. Anthony, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Ben, thank you for having me. You're gracious in my introduction. I'll try and do what I can.
it's interesting because there's a lot of people who have sort of found themselves in one way or the other in the world of data centers, and you've been there for a minute, right? It's not something that's necessarily been shoehorned into your job title. You're somebody who has that level of expertise. So I want to set the table sort of like this. For those of us really who come from a lot of different tangential industries and maybe for the first time have to have real meaningful conversations about data centers, everything from hyperscalers all the way to the more localized and regional ones, what are sort of some of the demands and drivers of this massive appetite for data centers?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think what's leading a lot of the conversation and headlines everywhere. So, you know, it's interesting. We find ourselves in the most dynamic industry, I would say, not just right now, but some would argue in history. And if you look at the CAGR growth of all the components that are playing a part in it, it's very, very interesting. We find ourselves in a very exciting but interesting time frame. So the main thing that I think most people know of is the race to AGI, right? So artificial generative intelligence, which is basically the human intelligence. So think about the open AIs of the world and all the ChatGPT models, the XAIs, the Groks, the DeepSeek R1s, and then now many of the hypers, all racing towards this AGI and who's going to get there first. And so we're seeing that the amount of high-powered compute just growing exponentially. And then we have other macroeconomics that are happening, things like bioengineering, crypto mining, which needs to be up 24/7, 365. Edge computing, so you can stream Netflix or scroll Instagram with zero latency. So all of these things are compounding, and we find ourselves at this intersection where data centers have been around for decades, but it's only the last 2 to 3 years where we find ourselves at the top of the headlines everywhere, touching every geography, every utility plant, everywhere, and the demand is so huge. So you know, if I take a few years back, Ben, and just run you through, and I'll use NVIDIA as an example, as we see the climb, as we saw NVIDIA's chip evolution go from A100s to the Grace Hoppers to we find ourselves now in Blackwells and then Rubens, and then the talk of Ultra Rubens, we found ourselves once upon a time at 6 to 9 kilowatt racks. That's it. And now we're on the verge of 240 kilowatt racks, which is insane when you think about the power and the heat that is coming off of a single rack, 22 in a line, and hall after hall after hall. And then the talk of 600 kilowatt racks and 1 megawatt racks, it's actually unfathomable based on where we once came from in the 6 to 9 kilowatt rack range. But that's the evolution that we find ourselves in. This age of computing, and where I find myself is not only just understanding all of that from an industry perspective, but now enter cooling. I mean, we have the unique privilege as Johnson Controls to cool the internet. And so when I talk about cooling, it's the entire thermal chain. So the thermal management chain, because I'll reference one of my old colleagues that said, data centers are just like babies. They need feeding and they need comfort. Feeding is the power, comfort is the cooling. And those are the two things that data centers need. And so we find ourselves in the thermal management chain, the ability to capture the heat, transfer the heat, and reject the heat into the atmosphere. So that's where we find ourselves, and a little bit of context for your listeners out there on why the demand and why we see data centers in every headline news media outlet everywhere. I hope that helps a little bit.
It does. I'll tell you what's really interesting, Anthony. We'll probably dig into some vertical use cases, applications, how sort of the world of data centers crosses over. But you threw out some big numbers there, and my mind immediately goes, to we live in a world where a lot of corporate initiatives and things like ESG are really, really important. And I hear data centers and my mind says, oh, my power draw is 3-4x what it used to be. My, you know, my output is 3-4x what it used to be. How does that sort of jive with this transition and demand for ESG sustainability, things like that? And like I said, we'll dig into the specifics about vertical use cases, but my mind immediately goes there and says, how in the world do we have these conversations at the same time?
Oh, it's such an interesting question. It's one that I think is, or I know is at the forefront of everyone's minds. If you think about we need to steward our resources well, that's for sure, right? And to put it in perspective for all your listeners and for you, Ben, like 1 gigawatt of a cluster campus is equivalent to 1 million homes. So 1 million homes hitting the grid when they say we're going to do 1 gigawatt of an infrastructure land and shell, or 2 gigawatts, and some are talking about 3 gigawatts. That's 1 million home a gigawatt hitting the grid. It's like a little metropolis entering a utility grid and using power and water. And, you know, data centers aren't necessarily the prettiest to look at, and they're noisy, right? So there's a lot of good neighbor concepts that we need to understand and we need to do better at. So it is on top of everyone's minds. You mentioned power and usage, and I live in California. We barely can handle what we have now with all of our electric cars. And so experts are saying by 2027, the North America's power consumption just for data centers alone could be anywhere between 6 and some say 9% of the entire North American power grid used for data center consumption. So it's very interesting, but there's the other part of it that we're not going to bottleneck growth based on the technological age we find ourselves in. So there's a dichotomy of like, we need to steward our resources, but the information age is growing at such a CAGR growth that I don't know how we get our arms around it. There's no real silver bullet, I will say yet, but I've been in many, many seminars where we're brainstorming with some of the smartest minds around this. And everyone's kind of saying, it's got to be a compilation of possibly nuclear, fuel cells, solar, wind, maybe a little bit of everything, but there's been no one silver bullet that is offsetting the amount of megawatts or gigawatts that are coming into these areas all throughout. You're in Texas, Ben, so obviously all throughout Texas, Northern Virginia. I'm from the Silicon Valley area, but then you think of Frankfurt and Singapore and Sao Paulo and the places around the world. I think of three main things when we talk about ESG or sustainability, or when we're on that topic, that advanced cooling technologies is one thing that can help offset a little bit. So as we're implementing innovative cooling solutions, and I mentioned liquid cooling a little bit in the heat transfer and capture, but that can significantly reduce energy consumption and enhance efficiency. And I think that's one component of it. The renewable energy integration. So I mentioned possible nuclear, which is very clean, fuel cells, solar, wind, anything to minimize carbon footprints where we can is a great solution in the interim. And then I think eventually energy efficient designs. So as we get closer to base of design, as architects are designing these land and shell and the designs of the how everything flows throughout, designs that optimize our PUE, so our power usage effectiveness, and incorporating energy efficient hardware where we can will help offset a portion. Right? A portion. I'm hesitant to say how much because no one really knows. And we're just now pushing the envelope of we got to do something. And it's a little bit more of outside of you and I, Ben, it's outside of Johnson Controls' singularity. I think it's almost more of a social issue where there's multiple collaborations that need to take place with different parties.
You're right, and I actually agree with you 100%. It's easy for us to sort of point the finger at the world of power, right? But ironically enough, data centers are the intersection of obviously the power world, but the IT and fiber and infrastructure world, even the access control, you know, all sorts of different places sort of exist in the data center world. But there has to be sort of a natural collaboration, right? Because what may be working in one industry may not work in the other. And we don't always, you know, sometimes we like to keep our blinders on, and there are things and ideas that we could pull from different places. But I'm curious, obviously, at a high level, it sounds pretty daunting. I mean, how do you see these different applications and industries collaborating really to better serve that environment, specifically in data centers?
Well, when you think about applications, and you mentioned like access control, IoT connectivity, those types of things. I mean, from a Johnson Controls perspective, I can say like our portfolios or our suite of offerings cover not just like the thermal chain, but the controls aspect of it, and then fire and life safety and security, and then the serviceability with service and parts for all of those components. And you know, at first glance, it's very tough to do, but the strategy we've put in place, and a lot of it is developing and creating our organizations, so our global data centers solutions organizations that are scaling with our customers now as we're getting close to base of design. So when you think about the thermal chain or power, you're usually dealing with the owner, and it's an OFCI, owner furnished, contractor installed, purchase, and you make the decisions. It's at the forefront of all the decision making. Whereas when you think about security and fire and some of the access control and all of those other ancillaries, which are very important to physical and cybersecurity, that's done a little bit later down the line. And it's more CFCI, so contractor furnished, contractor installed. But the way we've set up our organization is we have technical sales engineers, highly technical, that would develop and the base of design and help templating and specs. And how do you create uniformity of those templates, whether you're implementing in the US or I mentioned Frankfurt or Singapore and South America, wherever there's fiber and energy consumption and availability, how do we bring those solutions and co-architect, co-author that together as it gets closer to base of design? Well, I think it's a great question. We are currently doing that now as we're bringing everything together. It's not easy, right? It's not as fluid as we would like. There's, when you think about all the hyperscalers or the first tier colos, think about the purchasing teams that are involved. Some of them don't even talk to one another. And so how do we just not only create our solution suite to bring to the table, but how do we get all of their heads nodding in the right direction? And we generally or historically have worked with operators and facilities and engineers at these data center sites, whereas now we're starting to interact with IT. So when you think about the unified management platforms, or what we would say the DCIM, data center infrastructure management, how do our solutions integrate with that as they are looking at their critical assets? The easiest we can be to our customers in doing business and providing solutions that get to where they need to be, the better off we're going to be.
Well, look, Anthony, obviously all that's great in theory, right? If all the channels of communication were all open all day, every day, we'd live in a much different world. But obviously there are some sort of threats and challenges, right? And there's some people who want to retain a little bit of autonomy. But the reality is as we expand our stakeholders and use cases, we have to be able to sort of speak the language, right? Whether that's a grid operator who knows my power draw requirements are going to go up 10x in the next 5 to 10 years. A, how do I manage that, but also manage the building automation, the facility side of things, the security. I need the utility to come run the dang fiber to the thing. How do you sort of manage those different personalities and stakeholders? And maybe what are some of the challenges you've seen, and maybe how can we overcome those?
It's a great question. We run into it every day, Ben. And I think the first
thing... Me too, by the way, and I don't run a data center.
Yeah, that's right. I think the first thing we just need to have, and this is just general for all of humanity, is like grace, just overarching grace for everyone's role. I think that everyone is doing the best that they can. And we need to think about that along with grace, realizing or recognizing that everybody once upon a time was from a different industry. Most of the people that I deal with 3 years ago did not set out to be in the data center space, right? It's the demand on compute, the high compute power. It's the CAGR growth of AGI. All of that are bringing multiple core competencies, I'll say, into the data center space. So we're all learning together. And I think if we take that approach, it helps us a little bit in understanding and grace upon one another. But I would say, like, the challenges that we have seen and a little bit of what we've been over to overcome is we could have a little bit of a diverse operational, I would say, priorities, if you will. So when each industry has unique objectives or operating needs, I think making true alignment can be challenging. And so that ultimately leads to communication. Communication is key, and setting expectations up front is key. And so we have a potpourri of core competencies now working together for one common goal. And how do we get our arms around that? And I think understanding the communication gaps, where we see a lack of effective communication channels between multiple stakeholders, as you mentioned, we can start to lead to understanding a little bit where we need to be, the gaps we need to fill, and have everyone understand a little bit of one another in a way. And so I think it's an ongoing challenge, but I see it getting better and better, you know, every month, every year that we're rowing in the same direction in this space together. We have to remember it's still fairly new in a way. It's about 2 to 3 years old, and people every day are jumping in this industry because they can offer wonderful, if it's strategy, if it's innovation, wonderful ways to lead and develop, go to market, all of those things. And so it's a great question and ongoing ways to remedy that for sure.
Anthony, I'll tell you this. I'm going to steal that. A potpourri of core competencies might be my new podcast title. You know, it's interesting, right? You talked about sort of the industry being, I don't know that in its infancy is the exact right word, right? But relatively immature. You know, we like to pretend that we have all the answers to things. The reality is we don't, right? But yeah, it can be difficult for us to make real projections and think long term. But the reality is, when you look at facilities like this, this isn't a 5-10 year investment. This is a 40-50 year investment where we don't have the benefit of, I don't know, we don't have the benefit of always having the crystal ball, right? So we sort of have to guess. Obviously, the demand's going to go up. Our compute systems are going to get smaller. And in theory, we can generate and distribute heat better and all those things. But how does that sort of idea of longevity factor into the way that we're building, designing these systems now? Very much admitting, not knowing that we don't always have the exact right answers for what the world's going to look like in 40 years.
That's exactly right. I mean, you say 40 years, it's hard for me to even look out 2 to 3 years, right? Because once we get AGI and that's human intelligence, then it's the supercompute. And then after that, I mean, is quantum next? Like, there's so many things that are on the horizon that, I mean, goodness, 40 years out is pretty far. And we could look very, not getting conspiratorial, but we can look very different, right, in 4 decades.
Loaded data centers, I don't know. Maybe we'll put them in the air.
That's right. So space, right? Some of them.
Oh, don't even.
I don't know. We'll see. But what I would say is, as we think about, like, long-term, I'll say long-term resilience or what matters most, I think there's an importance in understanding redundancy and resiliency and what models that we are housing. Is it AI training? Is it inference? Is it just normal compute? Is it edge computing, right? Like what is that? And some of them, it's all of it. And then the labs in which you are introducing new technology. So, like, there's really no data center that's 100% liquid cooling. In the future, that might be the case, but we have labs that are introducing portions of liquid cooling and direct to chip, single phase, two phase, whatever that might look like. So we're on the precipice of many innovative solutions that I think will see much more traction as the higher density compute racks grow and grow. But to answer your immediate question, redundancy and resiliency come to mind. And oftentimes, those terms are used very close together in a sentence, and some people can walk away thinking they're interchangeable. And so, you know, not knowing the entire audience who's listening, but the difference between like redundancy and resilience. Redundancy, think of that as duplication. Okay. So when you hear N plus one or 2N, which would be a completely mirrored environment, that's what that means. Whereas resilience is the ability to recover as fast as possible. So I always like to equate it to, I've got kids, I've got a 10 and a 12 year old. And so I'm always trying to explain things in a way that they understand. And so if you think of it like a simple car analogy, redundancy is having an extra tire, where resiliency is how fast can you keep driving, right? We know how to replace the tire. We had to change the route entirely, but how fast can we keep driving? So those two things are becoming very, very important, because when you have the power, you have the cooling. Well, how do you keep that up all the time? I mean, we're talking all the time. The amount of lost revenue every second that a data center is down is substantial, is substantial. And SLAs, to all the people globally that are supporting that from a service and part standpoint, those SLAs are stringent. So those two things are very, very important. And then I would say, as we think a little bit more longer term, I mentioned DCIM, data center infrastructure management, but I think also like a true SCADA. So DCIM or SCADA, the supervisory control or data acquisition, understanding both of those and how they manage all critical assets, especially from a predictive maintenance standpoint, is very important as well. Because if we could leverage data analytics for predictive maintenance as a whole, it prevents failures, extends equipment life cycle, all of that. And so we're on the verge of toying with that. Some customers have it implemented better than others, but we'll see much more of that in the future. And the ability to scale the infrastructure, to have uniformity builds. And when you think about like why chips work and output at a certain rate or a certain speed, sometimes even the most brilliant engineers don't exactly know how it works. So when they replicate it, they replicate everything the same. And so I think we'll start to see that with a lot of land and shell and the way it's designed. But I think those kind of 3 to 4 prongs are going to be very important as we look towards the future, Ben.
Yeah. Well, one of the things too, even as you mentioned that, it comes to mind is sort of the idea of modularity, right? And whether it's active replacement of, hey, you know, I've got 10 sections, section 9's undergoing maintenance today, section 8 tomorrow, stuff like that, you know, and it also allows scale, right? So if I need to say, hey, in the summer of 2030, my projection means I'm going to need this, but I don't need it today. Right. So it allows you, gives you that sort of scale and that opportunity. You know, what one of the things that sort of comes to mind as we talk about this, and we joked obviously about space, I don't know that we're running out of land is the right way to put it, but we're not great right now about ultra efficiency with some of these things, right? Some of that's the immaturity of the market, but we just keep building and building and building. And at a certain point, I don't know if that's 10, 15, 20 years from now, we will not necessarily have the infrastructure. But when you think about sort of the next generation of maybe data center design, what are some of the things that we're even implementing, starting to think about now that will continue to maybe alleviate some of those pressures of space, functionability, things like that?
Absolutely. So the things that we're thinking about now, and we'll start to see this implemented more and more over the next few years, and it'll become much more highly efficient. Because I still think of this as, even though data centers aren't new at all, really the last 2 to 3 years have been a little bit of the Wild West, where like we are building and we cannot supply fast enough in a way. And so eventually that comes to an end, whether that's land and space or power or water or regulations and compliances and things like that. But the things that we're working on from a next generation standpoint are things that will, I think, we'll start to see implemented in the next few years. Certainly the thermal chain evolution, right? As we think about higher density racks, thermal chain evolution is going to be a big component to that, because aside from the power, you need the cooling. And as the higher density racks and higher compute are pumping out more kilowatt racks, you are going to need a lot more technology to cool those chips, to capture it, to transfer it, and to reject it. And so, you know, I had alluded to liquid cooling, but like the ability to take servers themselves and actually then dip them into liquid cooling. Like when did we ever think that was a good idea? And now that's what we need to actually cool these chips. And then the two-phase immersion, which would actually be having that water boil and then circulating it. We're getting very creative and it's pretty amazing. So that's one. I think we'll see the thermal chain evolution really, really come fully to fruition over the next 2 years or so. I also think the shift from AI training to inference is important. And so all the training models that are happening will eventually be inference tomorrow. But I don't think that we are going to let up on innovation. And so there'll always be these AI training models that we need to service. Things like edge computing for integration to address all the latencies or lack of latencies across the world. So when we're streaming Netflix, I mentioned, or, you know, we're looking at social media, zero latency, even to the smallest consumer, we're going to see many, many benefits to that. I also think sustainable construction practices, even though that becomes a little bit more of a social issue with many collaborative parties involved, but anytime we can use sustainable materials or construction methods to reduce the environmental impact or support any green initiatives is always something that we're going to start to, is always great, but it's going to be something we're going to start to see more and more of as regulatory compliances start to hit these builds. The other one that comes to mind is the AI-driven optimization. So how do you lead significant efficiency gains and productivity issue resolutions within that? And that's a big one we're going to start to see. I mentioned a lot of software, but the software components are going to be the optimization lever that a lot of these data centers are going to pull. So if it's design and it's optimization, and how do you make these more efficient? And then, of course, everything that I just mentioned, and even today, the service models to support all of this, the service models of actual techs and engineers going out to make sure these are operable 365, 24/7, and the parts. I mean, these go down, and certainly we have redundancy and resiliency plans, fail safes in place. But still, it's really something when you think about the service and the parts arms that have to support this. It's one thing to build it. It's another thing to service it into perpetuity.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Anthony, it's really difficult to sort of overstate the demand and the need and the value, I suppose, of the world of data centers. But the reality is, and the conversation's been great so far, but we've mostly kind of spoken about sort of the technical, the practical, the use case. And there's this whole community outside of what I would call the nuclear data center industry, not nuclear power, the core, I would say, maybe data center industry, where we're bringing in stakeholders from all sorts of different places across our business communities, technology communities. And I don't think that they don't know what's coming. But I think there's just a lot of misinformation, maybe even sort of just uncertainty about how that market's going to continue to evolve, and they're going to need to be part of these conversations. But what are some of the things right now that you think maybe might be driving some misunderstanding, or maybe some of the more critical things that the folks need to know, maybe that aren't in the data center industry currently?
Yeah, it's a great question. So like I live, eat, and breathe it every day, and very quickly, I understand as I have dinner with my family every night and explain what I do for a living, you know, my kids and my wife are like, okay, Anthony, that sounds great, right? Like they
it's very theoretical for them. Yes.
It's funny. It's but there's also like a realization that like, wow, even meeting with friends and community and family, like they're the halo effect outside of the immediate. The information, there are a lot of misunderstandings and you see a lot of things in headlines. But for the people that are interested in this, that are in this business, that there's still maybe misunderstanding or core competencies that are jumping into this industry, there's two things that come to mind. One is understanding that like the data centers themselves are beyond physical infrastructure. So what I mean by that is like, we think it's land, shell, servers, racks, halls, and that's it. And so we perceive it as physical server spaces, and that's it. And I think we're overlooking a lot of the intricate systems and the operations that really ensure their entire functionality and that they can operate and then create zero downtime with that. I mean, I like to think of it as these are real ecosystems, and we're creating ecosystems, and they are supporting the brains in which the future is going to, I could almost say rely on, but like really foundational pieces that data centers are housing. And so if we start to think of them as ecosystems, as opposed to just beyond physical infrastructure, we'll start to appreciate how valuable they actually are, and therefore the care in which we need to put on them. The other thing that's interesting is AGI's role, so artificial generative intelligence's role in digital transformation. So like, we already know data centers, they play a pivotal role in understanding and enabling digital services, but the innovation that comes with that is so underappreciated. And it could be that people just don't know. It could be that no one's really sat down to explain it with them. But this role, and if you follow it from a trajectory standpoint, what we're seeing in the digital age and transformation is truly revolutionary. And the only thing I can equate it to would be like the Industrial Revolution, which even then doesn't even come close to what we're experiencing now. And I grew up, I was born in the mid late 80s, and I grew up in the 90s. And when I went to school and high school, there were no phones, there were no iPhones. And now we hold iPhones in our pockets that have the same compute power as a PS4 from like 9 years ago. It's crazy. And so for me to see the evolution of the internet coming into the home, the iPhone take place, even when I went to school in undergrad, there wasn't a lot of computers out there with people taking notes. Now my daughters all have computers and everything's done online. So like to see this curve and then enter AI and enter where we will find ourselves. And I think it's very underappreciated, but I don't think it's something that we want to push away, Ben. I think it's actually something we want to embrace, because when I tell my kids, as they will enter the workforce someday, what I tell them is it's not going to be so much what you can bring to the company, but it's how do you leverage the tools at your disposal to be 2x, 3x you would normally be to that company. And that's where a lot of the value is going to come from.
Anthony, you know, I think it's very ironic that hyperscaler is in the name of a lot of these data centers, because really when it comes to the technologies and capabilities that they empower, it gives us as humans the opportunity to be better humans and scale, right? And you know, it's even interesting. You talked about some of those end users and use cases, and now data centers become not only these massive places where you're storing and building data, but they're also powering rural areas and partnering with co-ops and municipalities. There's so many ways that this community will continue to empower and serve not only our core businesses, right? We love the world of B2B and it's amazing, but we get to really touch people at the end of the line with a lot of these technologies, and it's incredible to see. And Anthony, I'll tell you what, we've got to find a way to have you back on. It's very hard to eat this elephant in one episode, but I appreciate you coming on today, and we've got to find a way to get you back on. So Anthony, thanks so much for coming on.
I would love to. And Ben, thank you for having me. This was a joy. Thank you.
And thank you all for tuning in as well. Be sure to like and subscribe. Check us out next time on the show. I'm sure we're going to have Anthony back on soon, so stay tuned.